I'm Catherine Hadro. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, a bit of a departure. President Joe Biden begins his political goodbye with an opening night appearance at the Democratic National Convention. What's on the agenda for day two? Eye on the Middle East, new developments in the push for a ceasefire and hostage exchange between Hamas and Israel. Considerable uncertainty. The top organization for plastic surgery in the U.S. tells us why they are not endorsing transgender procedures for teens. And prime time in Rome. Why the founder of Amazon paid a visit to the Vatican. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
A second Trump term would rip away even more of our rights. Passing a national abortion ban, letting states monitor pregnancies and prosecute doctors, restricting birth control and fertility treatments. We cannot let that happen.
The opening night of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, with a surprise appearance by Vice President Kamala Harris and a focus on abortion. Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Bernard of Clairvaux. I'm Catherine Hadro in for Tracy Sable. Our top story tonight, as Democrats kick off day two of their convention in Chicago, former President Donald Trump and his running mate continue to hit the road in battleground states. The Trump campaign trying to blunt the Democratic celebration by focusing on issues like the economy, crime and safety, national security and the border. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Good evening, Catherine. It's a packed schedule. Today, the former president in Michigan and his running mate, J.D. Vance, in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And Vice President Kamala Harris, who will speak Thursday at the DNC, will hold a rally tonight right up the road from Chicago in Milwaukee.
As Democrats gather for another day of celebrating their presidential candidate, Kamala Harris, former President Donald Trump visits Howell, Michigan, the Livingston County Sheriff's Office, talking law and order at a crime and safety event tied to the theme of Make America Safe Again.
Over the past 4 years, the Marxist left has waged a vicious war on law enforcement in our country. They've taken away the dignity and the spirit and the life of some of these police officers, and that's why you see it. The crime is so out of control in our country.
And in another battleground state, Wisconsin, GOP vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance holds a news conference at the Kenosha County Courthouse, also discussing crime.
We're going to support the death penalty for drug dealers because they kill far more people than some of the most violent and vicious criminals. We have got to have real penalties for people who are killing our kids.
Back in Chicago, President Joe Biden delivering the key address last night, lashing out against Trump on crime.
And Americans are safer today than under Donald Trump. Trump continues to lie about crime in America, like everything else.
Biden says crime went up under Trump and down after he and Vice President Harris invested in public safety.
Violent crime has dropped to the lowest level of more than 50 years. And crime will keep coming down when we put a prosecutor in the Oval Office instead of a convicted felon.
Biden's speech was pushed into late night as the program lagged more than an hour behind schedule. Still, an emotional farewell, here dabbing his eyes after a speech from his daughter, and then basking in the applause of the Democratic audience. The president and his family spending the rest of this week at the ranch of a longtime Democratic donor in California. Biden won't be in Chicago when former President Barack Obama and former First Lady Michelle Obama return to the Windy City they once called home to take the stage and energize Harris supporters, with just over 2 months to go until Election Day, November 5th.
Also tonight, U.S. intelligence officials are confident Iran is responsible for the hack of Donald Trump's presidential campaign. They say Tehran is trying to interfere in American politics and undermine faith in democratic institutions. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Chicago Archbishop Cardinal Blaise Cupich gave the prayer of invocation on Monday night at the DNC. During his prayer, he called for peace, particularly in areas of war, and for unity. He said, "We are a nation composed of every people and culture, united not by ties of blood, but by the profound aspirations of life, freedom, justice, and unbound hope."
It appeared Cardinal Cupich's prayer was an attempt to build bridges between the Democratic Party, Democratic Party delegates, and the Catholic Church by emphasizing issues of common concern. He brought up care for the common good, ending the senselessness of war, and without mentioning any issues such as abortion that may cause a rift between him and the audience that evening.
Just outside the doors of the DNC is a reflection of Kamala Harris's main agenda, a mobile abortion facility. Planned Parenthood boasted on social media that a mobile bus will provide free chemical abortions and vasectomies on Monday and Tuesday. Planned Parenthood says it is a demonstration of access to so-called health care. But there is a pro-life presence combating that narrative of choice.
Your baby loves you and you are already a mother.
We have been keeping vigil outside the Planned Parenthood murder bus, which is what we're calling it.
The group, called Progressive Anti-Abortion Uprising, or PAU, held signs, chanted and used a bullhorn to cause disruption, and also reached out to people to talk about the realities of abortion. The organization brought educational tools to teach mothers about the size of their unborn baby while it grows, free pregnancy tests, and shared pregnancy resource information with them. Teresa Bukovnik, founder of PAU, says she has tried multiple times to have pro-life discussions with the Democratic Party, but they refused to meet with her. The National Catholic Register's Peter Laffin is on the ground at the DNC to bring us daily coverage. Be sure to log on to ncregister.com to read the latest news from Chicago. A diocese in Rhode Island says it is disappointed that a Catholic college hosted a political fundraiser featuring support for abortion. The Diocese of Providence reacted strongly after an appearance by Democratic vice presidential nominee Tim Walz at Salve Regina University. The on-campus event reportedly raised $600,000, and Walz pushed for abortion. Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey officially resigned from office today, a month after a jury convicted him on 16 counts of federal corruption charges. He faced a bipartisan push to step down. Menendez was convicted of bribery, extortion, wire fraud, obstruction of justice, and acting as a foreign agent. Sentencing is scheduled for October 29th. He faces a maximum of 222 years in prison. Menendez and those found guilty of bribing him have asked a judge to throw out the verdicts. Meanwhile, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy is appointing his former chief of staff, George Helmy, as interim senator until early January. Voters will elect a successor in November. The front runner is Democrat Andy Kim. Now to the crisis in the Middle East, where the bodies of several hostages taken from Israel on October 7th have been recovered, but the fighting continues. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has agreed to send a negotiating team to Cairo later this week for a new round of talks with Egyptian, Qatari, and U.S. mediators. It's now up to Hamas to agree. Both sides say major disagreements remain unresolved. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us with the latest. Eric?
Yes, good evening, Catherine. Some analysis remains skeptical that Hamas is going to go along with any deal that includes continued Israeli occupation in the region. But that's not stopping U.S. officials, including the Secretary of State, from working on a ceasefire. He says delays could mean more hostages could die and further obstacles could hamper any agreement.
The next important step is for Hamas to say yes, and then in the coming days for all of the expert negotiators to get together to work on clear understandings on implementing the agreement.
Months of on and off talks have circled the same issues. Israel saying the war can only end with the destruction of Hamas, and Hamas insisting it will only accept a permanent, non-temporary ceasefire.
The United States hasn't helped in this, in that we're essentially making common cause with Hamas to apply pressure to the Israelis to end the ceasefire negotiations on terms favorable to Hamas. And again, this places Israel in an impossible position that they cannot accept. And so I think we've seen the last of the ceasefire talks for a while.
Lawmakers, including Foreign Affairs Committee Chair Michael McCaul, says Hamas will never agree to a deal that keeps its leader out of power.
Any talks of ceasefire, while it sounds great, it keeps Sinwar in power, Hamas in power, and this cannot be finalized until Hamas is out of power.
There really isn't anything more militarily that Israel can achieve in Gaza. If they want to get the hostages home, if they want to increase the possibility of a secure Israel, the Netanyahu government needs to do everything in their power as well to get this deal done.
Meanwhile, the fighting continues. Today, Gaza's Civil Defense Agency says at least 12 people have been killed in an Israeli airstrike on a school west of Gaza City, housing displaced families. Israel says Hamas was using it as a militant base. Israel's military also recovered the bodies of 6 hostages from southern Gaza. According to Israeli authorities, 109 hostages remain in the Palestinian territory, of whom around a third are believed to be dead. There is also another concern. The territory's Hamas-run health ministry is also waiting to receive polio vaccines as the risk of an outbreak grows in the territory. The Israeli agency that supervises aid deliveries to Gaza said that the vaccines to inoculate more than 1 million children should arrive in the coming weeks. Catherine?
Thank you, Eric. Incredible pictures coming in as a fire is raging at a Russian oil depot. This is the third day firefighters have struggled to get the blaze under control. You can see the special gear they're wearing to protect themselves from the intense heat. Some 500 firefighters are on the scene and more than 40 have been injured. The fire began after a Ukrainian drone attack, part of the Ukrainian offensive into Russia, the largest since World War II. Russian media says at least 17 people have been killed, and the injured include 4 children.
Minors have very little understanding of what a lifelong change it would be to transition.
Lifelong implications of controversial gender transition surgery. When we return, why another major medical association is breaking away from the U.S. medical consensus on gender transition for minors. And don't panic in this roller coaster economy. An expert joins us next to tell us why. Welcome back. Catholic bishops in Scotland are speaking out against a new proposal regarding assisted suicide. The measure would allow terminally ill adults over the age of 16 to be given assistance in ending their own lives. In a statement, the bishops say the measure, quote, provides a quick, cheap alternative to care. They also accuse the bill of coercing the vulnerable and elderly into feeling they have, quote, a duty to die. Assisted suicide is currently illegal in Scotland. Supporters claim the assisted suicide proposal would make the country, quote, a more compassionate society. Another medical association is stepping away from consensus on gender transition treatment for minors. The American Society of Plastic Surgeons released a statement that it has not endorsed any organization's practice recommendations for the treatment of adolescents with gender dysphoria, and goes on to say that there is considerable uncertainty as to the long-term efficacy of surgical interventions. It goes on to say that existing evidence base is viewed as low quality and low certainty. Catholic ethicist Dr. Joseph Meany agrees and hopes other medical organizations follow suit.
Particularly with young people, that these irreversible changes should not be done to young persons who don't really understand the lifelong consequences. And so I think American medical societies are more and more going to realize this. I think also that they're going to be aware of the legal liability that doing this to children could come back in the form of lawsuits later on saying, wait a second, I did not have proper informed consent as to how life transforming this would be, and I regret that decision.
In a June declaration, the American College of Pediatricians officially called on all medical institutions to stop harmful gender transition medication and surgeries for minors, urging them to treat the mental health of those suffering with gender dysphoria.
Gender dysphoria is a diagnosis, whereas transgenderism is an ideology. The natural course of gender dysphoria is desistance by adulthood, conservatively in 85% of the cases, unless it is affirmed.
Doctors and medical professionals from more than 50 countries signed the Doctors Protecting Children Declaration. With more insight on this decision, we bring in now Dr. Scott Bradley Glasberg, president of the Plastic Surgery Foundation, which serves as the research arm of the American Society of Plastic Surgeons. Dr. Glasberg, thank you for being with us. Can you briefly—
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Can you briefly explain what in your research or data ultimately led the ASPS to this decision?
So, as members of the multidisciplinary care team, plastic surgeons prioritize evidence-based medicine. So we have a responsibility to provide comprehensive patient education and maintain a robust and evidence-based informed consent process. And so currently, the research on chest and general surgeries for adolescents with gender dysphoria simply isn't strong enough to support any definitive recommendations from our society.
Mm. Did your group experience any kind of outside or inside political and social pressure to arrive to a particular decision?
So fortunately, plastic surgery is a specialty guided by evidence, and we're not influenced by external sources or by politics. And so the society's stance on the issue has remained consistent. We believe that more high-quality research in this rapidly evolving area of healthcare is what's needed, and our priority remains focused on patient safety and informed decision-making.
Mm. Something that jumped out at me, this decision cited this notion of, quote, considerable uncertainty associated with these interventions. Can you expand on that and explain what that means?
Sure. We believe that the level of evidence in these studies are of low quality. And what that means is every study has strengths and limitations that can tell us something interesting. But it's important to take a step back and look at the effects that we see and analyze the larger body of evidence that accumulates over time. We say there's uncertainty as to long-term efficacy for the use of certain surgical interventions for the treatment of adolescents with gender dysphoria. We mean that there's uncertainty at many different levels. We're unclear, really, what the outcomes data shows, what the long-term effects of these treatments might be or could be. And we feel a responsibility to remain committed to that evidence-based approach and seeing out the research necessary for the society to make any kind of firm recommendations or come up with any kind of guidance or guidelines documents.
You know, making a decision like this is a major statement for any organization. Is this a final decision, or is this final for now? Do you foresee your organization changing its stance in the future?
So ASPS is committed to doing the research and looking at further outcomes. We've set a lot of resources in this area to look at other research opportunities. By no means is this a closed decision, but right now the decision based on the evidence, you know, that's been presented. If in the future the evidence changes one way or the other, we will analyze that and commit to coming up with whatever decisions are necessary, again, for patient safety, and base that on the clinical evidence available at that specific time.
Again, just in our final moments, this is a topic that is so often politicized and partisan, but it seems like you're saying this decision ultimately came down to the evidence.
Oh, there's no question. It's all about the evidence for us. Again, we're separate from politics. We're separate from outside forces. We are committed to being a scientific organization of surgeons who want to do right by our patients and want to provide the education necessary to our members to make the right choices that are in the best interest of our patients and that of patient safety. So with that, the evidence is the foundational support that is the key to making those decisions. And as a society, we have an extreme responsibility to maintain ourselves in that area.
Absolutely. Dr. Scott Bradley Glasberg of the Plastic Surgery Foundation, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
The stock market slipped slightly today after reaching near record highs over its 8-day winning streak. It would have been the first 9-day winning streak in almost two decades. Earlier this summer, the Dow Jones dropped nearly 10%. The news comes as Bloomberg reports U.S. job growth through March was likely far less robust than initially estimated. And this could mean the Federal Reserve will not lower interest rates. For analysis, we turn now to Dr. Jeffrey Campbell, economics professor at the University of Notre Dame. Dr. Campbell, great to see you again. First off, what has led to the sudden spike in the stock market, and could the markets go even higher?
Well, the markets are going to go up and down on a daily basis. And if I had the magic wand to or the crystal ball to understand what made that go up, I would not be talking to you about it. I'd be trying to trade on it. So honestly, most of us, the markets sometimes have a mind of their own. There's always a jump to pretend that you understand what's going on, but I'd like to stay away from that.
Well, if you trade on it, hope you still speak with us. On to the jobs report and the likely revised numbers being down from what was originally forecast. Tell us why this matters and what it could mean for the U.S. economy.
Well, what the reason it matters is because it's a signal in the wrong direction that the economy is a little weaker than we thought it might be. Now, I say only a little weaker. Let's not overemphasize the latest piece of news we've gotten. There's plenty of other news out there that says that the economy is growing strongly. And so, and on net, and I'll repeat what I've said before, that we are kind of on the margin between a recession and a successful economy. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take some luck to keep us, either good luck to keep us on the right track or bad luck to push us off that track.
Mm. Changing gears slightly now, we know you are helping with the America First Policy Institute on the transition should former President Trump win in November. That being said, there's been a lot of talk about the economic speech that Vice President Kamala Harris gave last Friday. In fact, Forbes magazine says her proposals are a recipe for a depression. What did you make of her proposals?
So first, let me clarify with the America First Policy Institute and Transition Project. I have a very small role in that. By no means am I leading anything there. I'm just answering questions when they ask. Now, going on to Vice President Harris, her proposals from her speech and rally the other day were frankly not very coherent or promising. There were two big ones there. One was to somehow ban price gouging for food. The problem with that is that what one person's reasonable price is, another person's price gouge is. And defining that is really hard. Vice President Harris asserted in her speech that there were bad actors colluding on prices. But if she or anyone else in the federal government had real evidence of that, the Department of Justice and the FTC would already have been very much on it.
Mm. And
Just enough. I was going to say the other piece of that of her speech was the other concrete proposal was a $25,000 down payment insurance assistance for first generation first time home buyers. That it gives me an opportunity to talk about the economics of supply and demand. That's going to push up demand for housing while doing nothing for supply. What we really need are concrete proposals for increasing the supply of housing.
In our final few seconds together, any other economic news you're following that our viewers should be aware of?
No, I've got my eye on the election like everybody else. The Federal Reserve will have their conference, their annual conference in Jackson Hole this Friday. And the theme of that is reassessing the effectiveness of monetary policy. I wouldn't read too much into that, but at the same time, it's a welcome time it's a welcome event that the Fed is stepping back and asking, what can we accomplish? What can't we accomplish?
We'll keep our eye on that. Dr. Jeffrey Campbell, thank you.
Thank you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, one of the richest men in the world meets someone with great spiritual wealth. More on Jeff Bezos and his visit to the Vatican. Plus, we take you to a major gathering of lay faithful in the resort town of Rimini. Welcome back. Pope Francis may not have an Amazon Prime membership, but he did recently meet with the company's founder. Billionaire Jeff Bezos and his fiancée, Lauren Sanchez, met the Holy Father last week at the Vatican. Sanchez posted on Instagram saying it was an honor meeting Pope Francis. She says he reminded the couple not to take life too seriously and to keep lightness in their hearts. Finally tonight, thousands of people from around the world are gathering in Italy this week. It is part of an annual meeting held by the Catholic movement Communion and Liberation. EWTN's Benedict Cedergren tells us more.
Only the Lord saves our fragile humanity and, in the midst of adversity, lets us experience an otherwise impossible joy. With these words, Pope Francis encouraged the participants of the 2024 Meeting for Friendship Amongst Peoples, more commonly known as the Rimini Meeting, to become seekers of the essential. The annual event in Italy, which is attended by personalities from the world of politics and culture, was opened this year by the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Cardinal Pierbattista Pizzaballa, who reflected on the need for God amid the current war in the Middle East.
Non abbiamo le risposte.
We don't have the answers to this situation, but we have a direction, and this direction is God. Together, each from our own perspective and with our own pain, we must direct this question to the one who gives meaning to everything we do.
Recalling the atrocities of the war and its immense impact on the Israeli population, Pizzaballa, whose diocese stretches across Jordan, Israel, Palestine, and Cyprus, four regions divided both religiously and politically, lamented the current religious conflicts and the need for dialogue.
At the moment, interreligious dialogue is in crisis. We have come to a crossroads. In fact, right now, Christians, Jews, and Muslims are not able to meet, at least not publicly. It feels like we have gone back to being islands, focusing only on ourselves. We need to lift our gaze and recognize that we are not islands.
The president of the Rimini Meeting Foundation says the fundamental antidotes against the poisons of hatred and extreme polarizations are encounter and dialogue. Over the next several days, participants will listen to speeches, view exhibits, and exchange ideas on a multitude of topics, including promoting peace, mental health, end-of-life care, conservation, and more. In Rome, Benedict Cedergren, EWTN News Nightly.
Since its inauguration, the Vatican has always been very involved in the Rimini meetings. Guest speakers have included St. John Paul II, St. Teresa of Calcutta, and then Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, who had become Pope Benedict XVI. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Catherine Hadro. Good night, and God bless.